Whale, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. Right now, though, we're asking you to hold your calls. If you want to call later, we'll ask for calls if we want them. The number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for the time being. I wanted to start out this evening reading something that Paul Volcker had written. It was published in the Washington Post on the 10th of April of this year, just a little over 2 months ago. And here's what he wrote. Now, remember who Paul Volcker is. He is certainly one of the men who is in charge of the central banks of the world. He was the head of our Federal Reserve System, our privately owned central bank that controls our economy in the mid-1980s, and certainly he held that post until 1987. He has been with Chase Manhattan Bank, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He's one of the elite who really runs the world. And here's what Paul Volcker wrote. The U.S. expansion appears to be on track. Europe and Japan may lack exuberance, but their economies are at least on the plus side, and China and India, with close to 40% of the world's population, have sustained growth at rates that not so long ago would have seemed not impossible, but highly improbable. Yet, under the placid surface, there are disturbing trends. Huge imbalances, disequilibria, risks, call them what you will. Altogether, the circumstances seem to me as dangerous and intractable as any I can remember, and I can remember quite a lot. What really concerns me is that there seems to be so little willingness or capacity to do much about it. We sit here absorbed in a debate about how to maintain Social Security and, more important, Medicare when the baby boomers retire, but right now those same boomers are spending like there's no tomorrow. If we can believe the numbers, personal savings in the United States have practically disappeared. And then he goes on, of course, to talk about what's happening, how we're buying a lot of housing and rising prices and homes, but home ownership has become a vehicle for borrowing, as much a source of physical security. As a nation, we're consuming and investing about 6% more than we're producing. What holds all together is a massive and growing flow of capital from abroad, running about $2 billion every working day and growing. There's no sense of strain. As a nation, we don't consciously borrow or beg. We aren't even offering attractive interest rates, nor do we have to offer our creditors protection against the risk of a declining dollar. More recently, we're becoming more dependent on foreign central banks, particularly in China and Japan and elsewhere in East Asia. It's all quite comfortable for us. We fill our shops and our garages with goods from abroad, and the competition has been a powerful restraint on our internal prices. It surely helped keeping interest rates exceptionally low despite our vanishing savings and rapid growth. The difficulty is that this seemingly comfortable pattern can't go on indefinitely. I don't know of any country that's managed to consume and invest 6% more than it produces for long. The United States is absorbing about 80% of the net flow of international capital, and at some point, both central banks and private institutions will have their fill of dollars. I don't know whether the change will come with a bang or a whimper, whether sooner or later. But as things stand, it is more likely than not that it will be a financial crisis rather than policy foresight that will force the change. And what he is talking about is the financial crisis that is going to change America forever. We'll be right back with our guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. Bob, thanks so very much for being with us again tonight.
Well, it's very nice to be here again.
Well, now, of course, you heard I was reading that what I thought was a very, very provocative and very, very timely article that Paul Volcker had written, appeared in the Washington Post on the 10th of April. What are your thoughts on what he said? Is Paul Volcker an alarmist?
No, I don't think so. Paul Volcker is deeply involved in the establishment, which I call the elitist. And so he has an inside position on what's going on. And I think in every situation, if there is not an antithesis to an idea, they create one. And in this case, it's Paul Volcker who will be the one who will tell people that there's a problem at hand. And, of course, nobody will listen to him because it's just Paul Volcker, and they don't know how well he's connected, although he was chairman of the Federal Reserve. And so, you know, you will hear these things from time to time, and they'll come back later and I told you so. But in fact, they're really not telling most anybody anything because very few are listening.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think that the fact that Paul Volcker wrote this, it almost sounded like he'd been reading the International Forecaster, your publication, because so many of the things he mentioned were things you've been talking about and shouting about and trying to warn people about for a long time. So, you know, of course, then recently you even quoted a man named, was it Julian Robertson. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, generally speaking, Mr. Robertson is a money manager, has been in the past. He's in his 80s. He's one of the preeminently successful people that has been in the investment business for I guess, now over 50 years. And he is connected, and he is an elitist, and he handled finances for people like Margaret Thatcher and the $100 billion fortune, or at least part of it, that belongs to the royal family of England or the House of Windsor. So this man is very, very connected. And he was on CNBC last week, and he said that, just to capsulize it, he said, we're in serious trouble.
Oh, you hold that thought for just a minute when we bring our other stations back on board here. And, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And, of course, Bob has been following things even longer than I have, and that's an awful long time. And, of course, he's pointing out that Paul Volcker, and, of course, I gave you the quotation from Paul Volcker, former chairman of the Central Reserve, of our central bank, Federal Reserve System. But remember, it's a privately owned central bank, and the central banks work not to protect the people, but to control the banking interests, not only of this country, but the world, which work in concert and are dedicated to this idea of the world government. Well, anyway, of course, Paul Volcker is saying that he doesn't know whether the crisis is going to come with a bang or a whimper, whether sooner or later, but of course there is going to be an end to what's going on today, and he feels it's going to be in the form of a financial crisis. And then he concludes the article by saying, you know, that a very wise man once said that what needs to be done is seldom done now. It's always put off to later, and later is too late. And he said, I would hate to have that be the epitaph for America. And I really think that that will be, because nobody wants to hear the bad news. And yet the bad news is that we are in a fiat money system. We have nothing behind our money now. We were just talking about a man named Julian Robertson. And Julian Robertson is another member of the establishment. He manages the funds of the royal, at least for a time, they're part of the funds of the House of Windsor, of the British monarchy. Obviously a man with tremendous insight into what's going on in the world. And he appeared on CNBC last week. And did you actually see that the program, Bob, or did you read that Al Martin summary of it?
No, I didn't see the program. But I have three people who did.
All right, fine. I'm glad you did.
Who filled me in on it. And I don't watch CNBC because, by and large, it's nothing but drivel. And so I watch Rob TV, which comes out of Toronto. And I have that on all day long.
Well, tell us what Mr. Julian Robertson said, because you can go up and Google and pull this down. Of course, all the quotations are coming from some fellow named Al Martin. But I want to get this from people who actually saw it themselves. And Bob is reliable. And if he says people saw this, tell us what did the people say about Mr. Robertson, who certainly knows what's going on. He's 80 years old. He's one of the deans of the financial advisors of modern times. What did Mr. Robertson say?
Well, the final line was, we're going to end up in utter, utter, utter collapse. And, you know, what happens with these people who are involved in the conspiracy, sometimes they get a breath of conscience when they know they're coming to their end. And they defy their masters by coming out and telling the truth.
Now, Mr. Robertson's in his 80s, isn't he?
That's correct.
Right.
And so I think it could have been that, or for many, many years, when he was managing money and getting all of this inside information, which allowed him to make such great strides in making profits, he may have disliked these people immensely also. So either way, he came out with the statement, he'll never appear on CNBC again, and he'll probably have a very quick, untimely death.
Well, basically, he said that we're facing a total collapse of the economic system. Wasn't that, in essence, what he said?
Absolutely. That's exactly what he said.
And he said, you know, 10 years from now, the barbarians will be clamoring at the gates. And meaning, of course, that the poor, the impoverished, the people who've been, you know, who've worked their whole life to try to, have some security, they're going to lose their homes, they're going to lose their cars, they're going to lose their pension, they're going to lose their stocks and bonds. And we are in terrible strait because we have a fiat money system, and people don't understand that no fiat money system has ever existed. And certainly Aristotle, writing at about 250 years before Christ was born, having witnessed what a fiat money system said to ancient Greece, said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a fiat money system as long as you have perfect authority and godlike wisdom in kings. So what should people do right now if as they begin seeing these things happening? And we're not going to be able to change it because we have absolutely nothing behind our currency, and the rest of the world is not going to continue to finance our excessive form of government, using up 80% of the funds of the entire world while we live well and people elsewhere in the world are working in sweatshops. Their governments are not going to continue to definitely to subsidize our excesses when we're spending 6% more than we're actually producing. So
well,
what should people do, Bob?
I think it's borne out just recently. In the last 2 months, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury dropped from 4.56% down to around 3.7%.
It doesn't make any sense when they're raising the interest rates.
Well, that's true, but this is very unique, and it answers the question. And that is, professionals are moving out of the stock market, and they're running for safety. The safest thing that they know and understand is treasury paper, and the tens were very attractive. And since then, the tens have moved back up to 409, but there has been a stampede to buy paper like that, which is the 10-year treasury. So the 10-year treasury, for those who want to and have to stay in U.S. dollars, is probably a good place to stay out of harm's way. The other way would be to go to gold and silver coins and gold and silver shares. Beyond that, I really have very little to offer. I think we're at an apex here. This past week, last Wednesday, the price of gold in euro terms broke out to a new high over 350 to 352. And the Japanese yen against gold has also broken out, which tells me that Europeans, Japanese, and others are selling those currencies and they're buying gold because they are going again to fleeing to quality, and they're in fear of their own currencies, or for those who own those currencies, they're in fear that they might degenerate in value along with a lot of other currencies, if not all of them. And so you know, what have you got left? Real estate? I don't think I want to buy that at these high prices. And if interest rates start to move back up again, which they will, when foreigners decide, no, we're not going to continue to fund this horrendous debt, which this year will be close to $700 billion, or about 6.5% of GDP. And OECD says it'll be $900 billion next year, and that's been exacerbated by the fact that the dollar has gone from 136 euros to 122 euros in a space of about 4 months, which makes U.S. goods more expensive outside the country, which, again, exacerbates the balance of trade deficit, or balance the trade deficit and the current account deficit. And so with all of these things in mind, interest rates will begin to move back up again, and those people who are still in the stock market and are still in real estate in the big way will liably get hurt very badly.
Well, I was very interested talking to a young lady from Japan who has, of course, family lives there, and she said, you know, that you buy a house and every year it goes down in value. And this has been going on for, you know, for more than a decade. You buy a house, every year it drops in value. Here, we anticipate every year our house is going to go up in value. But, of course, the Japanese stock market and everything collapsed back about, what was about 1990. Everybody was saying that the Japanese stock exchange was going to go to 100,000, and it topped out at 40,000, and then started to drop. And, well, property there lost up to 90% of its value. And as this young lady was saying, the Japanese young people can't get any jobs. There just aren't any jobs there. Their jobs are all moving over to China. They're outsourcing jobs from Japan to China because everything's so expensive, and living standards are falling for the average Japanese. Do you think that they're maybe just a decade ahead of us?
I think they are absolutely a decade ahead of us. And the real estate market is down 70% as well. And so, yes, they have gone into deflation. They had their inflation, which occurred in the late 1980s, and they have been keeping themselves from going bankrupt by continuing to print money. Their debt to GDP is about 150%.
Now, could you explain that to our listeners?
Well, the gross domestic product is the amount of goods and services that are produced in a country. And they gauge debt against that, and a good ratio is 3, not 150. 3.6 is considered outrageous. So Japan's going to get out and go down hard. And they have been in a depression and a deflationary mode for a long time. And that's why every single month that sales drop, people buying things, consumerism, and, of course, the Japanese are sitting on great savings. But interest rates, if they figure in inflation, are about zero. And so I would think any sane Japanese would take all their money and put it in gold, but they've been hornswoggled by their government just like we have, and they don't know which way to run.
What is our debt to GDP ratio here at this country?
Debt to GDP?
Right.
It's about 7%.
About 7?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so basically,
You got to figure in this country that each year we create $2 trillion more in money and credit, and that smothers that figure.
And basically, our national debt is not, you know, even the $8 trillion they talk about, you know, the national debt somewhere of, what, $30, $40 trillion with all the money we promised to pay the elderly, the pensioners that we don't have, and the medical care we don't have the money for, and now, of course, the new drugs that we're going to provide to the elderly, there's no money for it. Where's it all going to come from? We're going to be back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman and for the International Forecaster. And what we're trying to get people to understand is that we're in real trouble, and most people are not going to survive what lies ahead. Only those people who understand and are making preparation now will survive the coming turmoil. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest Bob Chapman. Go ahead and pick up from that thought there, Bob.
Well, I believe that this strong dollar that we've just seen recently isn't going to make things ever more difficult. And gold is telling us, because it's not going down when the dollar goes up anymore, it's telling us it's getting ready to run, and of course silver will run with it too. And there's an absolutely super chance that gold will be over $500 an ounce by the end of the year. Gold and silver shares are deeply, deeply distressed, and they represent very, very good buys. In my publication, I make recommendations in that area, and recommendations about lots of things. And so, anyway, I think that's where we're headed, and if the people, investors, continue to buy the 10-year, I believe that the housing crisis will be temporarily put off. I expect it to start to hit next fall. It may in a small way in overpriced cities, but as long as the interest rates are where they are, we had a 5.52 30-year mortgage this past week, and that's the lowest it's been in some time. And as long as those rates hang around there, people will continue to get equity loans against their property. They will continue to cash out their properties, and they will continue to speculate in real estate. And so it could be prolonged, but it's not going to be prolonged for too long.
All right. Well, of course, there are an awful lot of people who are simply living off the equity of their home. They don't have to work. All they have to do is simply go out and borrow money on their home. But what happens if the prices of homes turn down and they've got, of course, this tremendous debt on their homes? Certainly they can just keep making monthly payments. Is that how it works?
Yeah, the unfortunate part about it is that the monthly payments increase. Because if the interest rates go up, say, 3 points from where they are, and the 30-year fix is not 5.5, it goes to 8.5, and that means adjustable rate mortgages are going to go up 3%, and they're currently, well, the 1 years are around 4.10, so you'll be looking at 7.10. It would completely dry up the real estate market, and it would also encourage bankruptcies, because payments would be going up, and people wouldn't be able to make them. People don't have extra money. They're doing what you have just said that they're doing, and that is they're borrowing against their real estate. Were that not available to happen, we would have gone into a recession, depression, long ago. This is the last gasp, and when this thing goes down this time, it's going to be horrific.
And I think there are a lot of people who really recognize that fact. What they've done is they've created a delusion, an illusion of tremendous prosperity by allowing the prices of the houses to keep rising, by keeping interest rates down. But there's nothing behind the value. It's all a paper entry. It looks great on paper, and it's sort of like when the stock market goes up, but there's nothing behind it. And, of course, when it collapses, if there's no solid value there, why, of course, an awful lot of people get hurt, as they did with Enron and Tyco and Global Crossing and so many of the other stocks that were, the value was run up with absolutely no basis at all for the price going up. There was no value behind the price. Would you say that would be a fair analysis?
Well, that's happened before, and in this last time between 1989 and 92, we didn't have anywhere near the debt that we have today.
Hold that thought right there for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, and he's from the International Forecaster. And the thing is that Bob is saying that we are just, our whole country is living far beyond its means. You cannot do that indefinitely. We've created a housing bubble by basically keeping the interest rates low. When the interest rates are low, then, of course, people will keep investing and bidding up more and more higher prices for the housing, and we're actually encouraging this, but there's nothing behind the values that we're putting on our property. The property hasn't increased in value. It is simply a perception, and these houses are, you know, far more expensive than the cost of replacement in many instances. Used houses far more expensive than building a new house. Why? Well, because it's all a speculative bubble. Would that be a fair assessment then, Bob?
Yes, it is. And so when you figure this enormous debt in, interest rates go up, and there's a quandary. You start to get bankruptcy. It feeds in itself. The stock market comes down as well. Yields go up on the fixed paper assets, such as U.S. Treasuries. And, of course, gold and silver and gold and silver shares take off at the same time. So you have all the worst things happening at once. And it's going to happen. I mean, this is their last gasp. There's nothing they can pull out of the hat after this. And American public is just going to be astounded and dumbfounded because nobody ever told them about this because they don't listen to programs like yours. And there's not many programs that are like this. And even the ones who listen to it, they turn it off and say, all right, I'm not going to listen to that nutcase. Well, you know, we've been doing this for 46 years, so I guess we do know something.
Well, I was very interested. On the 9th of June, that would be just last Thursday, I think it was, the Wall Street Journal carried an article that pointed out that we've lost 2.8 million industrial jobs, manufacturing jobs in America, since the year 2001. And, of course, there have been about 700,000 new jobs created. But that's all in construction and in banking, the banking to lend the money for the construction, the business, private home construction. But when you're losing your industrial base, and it points out this is 16% of our industrial jobs have disappeared since 2001. And almost every economist agrees the debate is over how, not whether or not, the global economy is going to have to be rebalanced. Will it be smooth through some combination of declining dollar and accelerated foreign demand, or will it be chaotic with a dollar collapse, much higher U.S. interest rates, and perhaps a global recession? Which way do you think it's going to go, Bob?
Well, I think it's pretty hard to tell. They will try to make it go down, allow it to go down incrementally. And what they will do is the Fed will use the repo market, and that's when they go in and buy government securities from banks, and they pay for them with money out of thin air. The money goes to 21 dealers, and they get together every morning in a conference call, and the Fed tells them how they're going to manipulate the market that day. And they're going to continue to try to do that. In fact, the repo market issuance in year-to-date over the last year has been 36%. And at the same time, M3 was up about 6%. Bank lending was up, and different other kinds of lending, not counting real estate. Well, counting real estate was up about 15%. And so that's how they've been covering it up, and they will continue to do so. And there's always some untoward, unplanned, really a Mickey Mouse event that happens, and bingo, the whole thing comes unraveled. And there's a number of instances I won't go through in history. Small things that happened that started a landslide. And so in all probability, it'll get out slowly, and all of a sudden people will start to catch on, and then it will become a landslide.
And really, I think that the amazing part of this is that the average American has no idea of economic history, that these things have happened over and over again, not only in this country, but down through the ages. And only this time they've been able to keep it going longer than ever before because of the computer analysis, and then something called the plunge protection team, which is, although immoral, is certainly legal. And when we get back, I'm going to ask Bob to explain to you how the plunge protection team manipulates the market. Now, supposedly that's dishonest, but you see, when the government does it, it's all right. Of course, they profit from it, but that doesn't really matter. The whole idea is that the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. But they can justify this saying, well, if we didn't have the plunge protection in there, protecting the stock market, well, it would fall, and think of all the suffering there'd be. And so they maintained it artificially. But, of course, you can only do this for a certain length of time, and eventually market forces will come to the fore. I believe they're going to collapse the economy and take us into the cashless society, where you'll neither buy nor sell unless you wear the mark of the beast. We'll be right back here with our special guest this evening, Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Bob Chapman, who writes the International Forecaster. And when our stations come back on board, why, Chris, we'll have him tell you how you can get copies of the International Forecaster. But right now, of course, what's your impression as far as the EU is concerned? The fact that both France and the Netherlands rejected the EU, the European Constitution, which, of course, would appear to be really a rejection of this whole idea of uniting Europe, which has been the plan of the globalists going back over 60 years to the end of the Second World War. They've always intended to unite Europe and then, of course, unite the Western Hemisphere and unite Asia and then mold them all together in this one world fascist dictatorship under the control of the ruling elite. Truly, the Platonic solution, the idea that Plato had put forward in his book, The Republic, where everybody would be controlled by the so-called just oligarchy or a just ruler. So, basically, what's going to happen to the EU now?
Well, first of all, it is fortunate that the elitists in Europe, when they decided to turn Europe into a subservient socialist elitist state, they went at it backwards. What they should have done, and I wrote about it back in the late 80s and the early 90s, is that they should have got all the political things straightened away first, including the end product, which is the Constitution and Parliament. They didn't do that, much to our benefit. What they did do is they started the Euro first, which is about 6 years ago. And up until just recently, there hasn't been too much of a problem. The main problem with the Euro is that the European Central Bank, even though countries have their own central banks, the European Central Bank is over them. And they have what they call a growth and stability pact. And they try to keep debt as a percentage of GDP under 3%. That's part of their agreement under the Maastricht Treaty, which is part of the EU existence and the beginning of the Euro in particular. And so what's happened now is that, and this is very, very surprising. I didn't see it coming, and that makes me feel good because I don't like to be right all the time. I like to be wrong occasionally, and or at least not perceptive enough to see what was coming. And so France and the Netherlands, they voted landslide-wise against the EU Constitution. After that happened, all of the regular elitists in Europe popped up and said, oh, that doesn't mean anything. Everything's going to be okay.
Hold that thought there for just a moment as we bring our stations on board. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And Bob is simply talking about what's happening. The European Union, and it was going, they thought it was going to be slam dunk. They were just going to get everybody to vote for this European Constitution. And then, of course, you'd do away with sovereignty. You'd do away with freedom. Everybody would be under the control of the bureaucracy, which would be controlled by the ruling elite of Europe. They planned to do the same thing in the Western Hemisphere and in Asia. And suddenly the French people and the Dutch people in the Netherlands didn't want to go along with it. And suddenly, after 60 years of plotting and lying and cheating and doing everything they could to deceive the people and telling them they were not trying to unite Europe, which was, of course, always their intent, and they were never going to interfere with individual freedom, and they've been consistently interfering with individual freedom, now suddenly, why, of course, France and Netherlands rejects this. And Bob feels that this really is a great thing. It's going to give us time to educate people about what this is all about. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
It is, and what happened is the elitists got blindsided. I mean, they did not see this coming, and, of course, as I said, neither did I. And so after these events have taken place, some say they're going to have another constitution submitted, but that isn't going to happen in the immediate future, if at all. And so immediately after that, the Northern League in Italy, which is a coalition partner with the party called Forza Italia, which is the party of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, who happens to be an elitist, incidentally. He has blamed previously the Euro for the troubles in Italy. And so the Northern League, and the president of the Northern League is also what we would call the Secretary of the Interior. He came out and said, no, we're going to have a referendum. And this week, Wednesday, they vote to see if there will be a referendum. And if there is a referendum for the euro, it'll probably be set sometime in the fall. And I believe that the euro will be rejected, and they will go back to the lira. And I think that will be the end of the euro and the end of the European Union, which will set the conspiracy back 50 years.
Well, of course, I feel that they'll probably come up with some sort of a crisis situation to punish the people for daring to go against the wishes of the elitists.
Well, that's possible, too, but I don't know what to contemplate to those ends. We have to wait and see.
All we can do is wait and see. We're simply observers, but I agree with you. I think it's a wonderful thing that the people have expressed themselves. I wish that the people of the United States were as wise as the people of Europe are, because they see what this is all about. The average American honestly believes when our government says, oh, let's just tear down the border with Mexico. Look at all those things we can sell into Mexico. And now, of course, when that didn't turn out well, we're going to have to do it better. We're going to have to bring in Bolivia and El Salvador and CAFTA. Look at all those people in Central America. They're all these wonderful markets for all of our products. Boy, it's going to get Americans working again. Of course, as I always love to say, what it's really about is raising the living standards of the average American to that of the Bolivian peasant. People cannot understand. That is the plan, to redistribute our wealth. And people say, why would anybody want to do that? There really are people who hate America. And when you understand that, when you understand they're working in both political parties, then everything makes sense. If you try to come up with any other solution, it's just nothing but confusion. Would you agree or disagree with that, Bob?
Oh, I agree with that. And this is also going to affect George Bush indirectly and his popularity and his abilities. It'll kill CAFTA. It'll be the final blow, which is a Central American Trade Agreement, which is wonderful. It will mean the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas is a dead duck, already was. It'll also mean that Mr. Bush's popularity, which is already down to 42% released today, and Congress is down to 31, if you can believe that. Now, that's how much people despise their own Congress. And so I believe that Bush, as a follow-on to what's going on in Europe, will also lose the Social Security private participation. In other words, the bill for Social Security is a dead duck. I believe that the horrible amnesty bill by Manchurian candidate McCain and stupendous drunk Edward Kennedy will fail. And
calling Edward Kennedy a drunk, he is the man that the Bush family, George Herbert Walker Bush and George Bush, gave the Man of the Year award to from their foundation. They gave it to Ted Kennedy in the year 2003. Anybody who doesn't believe it can check it out in Google
and
give them the documentation.
People don't
understand that the Bushes have always been in debt with the Kennedys, but we can't let the American people know that.
No, incidentally, I know the Kennedy family very, very well, and have since I was a youngster. And so I know their thought processes. Joe Kennedy's partner was my grandfather's brother. And that was during the 1930s. So
liquor running.
Well, I got to tell you that there weren't too many people who weren't running liquor during the 1930s, and that included my grandfather. But anyway, he's long gone, and I know about those people, but they're going to get nowhere with that too, and so that means that George Bush is going to be the earliest second-term lame duck in history. And once that happens by the end of the year, the Democrats will try to impeach George Bush. Now, he has made such a horrible mess of things along with his cadre of fascists that his masters, who are the elitists, are very liable to liquidate him because he's become an extreme liability. So I wouldn't bet 10 cents on his lifespan, whether as president or as a human being. I think things are going to get very, very nasty after the end of the year.
But I think even more frightening is Dick Cheney. I mean, George Bush is one thing, but Dick Cheney, is a very, 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 very clever and diabolical man.
Well, you know, he did have heart problems, and he's been under a great deal of strain, and so we could lose him. And there's plenty of other nasty, evil people who are around him, so we're going to have problems.
All right, well, let's before we go on, Bob, let's tell our listeners how they can get copies of the International Forecaster and, of course, get it on a regular basis, as I do.
Well, we have a toll-free number you can call, and that number is 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And if you'd like to visit my site, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International Forecaster, FOREcaster.com. If you'd like to email me, my email address is international_, that's like a dash, but it's lower down, it's like a line on a line, forecaster, FOREcaster, at Yahoo, YAHOO.com. We publish by internet every week, and we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month, and we discuss business, finance, economics, politics, and social issues all over the world. Are we still on the air?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wanted to talk about a friend of mine who has a mother is selling some expensive property. Here in Santa Cruz, all property is expensive. The cheapest home is, I think, $800,000. But, you know, there's going to be maybe $600,000 there. $300,000 are going to put into fourplex up in Washington, where prices really have not gone up, and we give it regular income. But what would you do with the other, say, $300,000 that you had to invest right now?
How old is the person?
Oh, probably about 70 years old.
Oh, I think that 75% should go into U.S. Treasuries, and the remainder should go in gold and silver-related assets.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Bill, who's calling in from Aptos. And if you'd like to give a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. So, hi, Bill. Did you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, it's a question. Essentially, it's based on the fact that when Bush Jr. was first elected, I always had the sense that somehow he was going to be the sacrificial lamb for this new world order. But I've seen these things on the web, and of course, you know, I understand you can't trust everything you see. But there's this squawk going on about something called Nisara, where at some point Bush and Cheney are, the plan is, Bush and Cheney will basically give themselves up for the 9/11 crimes and all sorts of fantastic things, but it's also to compromise the U.S. government, which will help usher in the New World Order. And I would like to take the guest's response to that on the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Bill. Well, what are your thoughts on what Bill has been talking
about? Well, I've read their information, et cetera. And it could turn out that way. I don't figure it will, but I'm not the last word either. And so I think if you roll everything together, there are going to be events that we cannot contemplate. Things are going to happen, but none of them are going to be good. And so what you do is protect yourself, protect your families and your friends, try to pass on information. Even though they may ridicule you at times, even your own family, and you just got to do what you can do. But as far as that happening, it could very well happen, but I haven't seen it that way yet.
All right, fine. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see what does happen here in the coming year, time. Certainly, if we go into a major depression, either the end of this year or next year, why, that will make certainly the Republican Party certainly very unpopular. And my concern, of course, is that the Christian faith is going to be totally discredited by the current administration, which professes overtly to be a Christian and proclaiming Christian values, and then puts Alberto Gonzalez, the man who authorized torture, in as Attorney General. Is there an inconsistency here? I mean, the administration says that they oppose torture, and yet we know it's going on. The CIA is flying people all over the world in their own air force out of countries like Jordan and Egypt and Syria, where people can be tortured. How can you possibly do that when the president says, well, I'm against this, but nobody loses their job? And, you know, as we see more and more things going on, we see we are involved in a war, and the explanation that was given for the war, after a while, people are going to begin to say it really wasn't true. Why would a Christian president, well, maybe Christians really aren't such good people. After all, my concern is that Christianity is really going to get a very bad name, not only in this country, but throughout the entire world. And certainly in the Muslim world, they see the way that Americans, not what they talk, but what they do. And they say that this is certainly not the sort of faith we would want to have. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, first of all, I don't believe that George Bush has been or ever will be a Christian. And I know about his younger life, most of which is not public knowledge. And that doesn't bear out.
I'm talking about perception, really, more than anything else.
Exactly, and somebody has to explain to me why Mr. Gannon made hundreds of trips into the White House at hours that were not inimical to the business.
Would you explain to our listeners who Mr. Gannon is?
Mr. Gannon is a man who is a male prostitute, and he entered the White House, I guess it was 17 times, and never checked out, and he was overnight in the White House some 32 times, and he visited another 100-odd times. And my question is, what is he doing there when everybody knows what he is? He gets ads up on the Internet, etc. And so that means that there are homosexuals in the White House. And I know that Karl Rove is a homosexual, and there obviously are others, and maybe our president is included among them.
Well, I think that certainly it would be very hard to document. I think most people would...
Well, why don't they answer the question as to why he was in there?
All right. Well, let's go to Ray, who's
calling. And they won't do that.
And
that's wrong. If they answered the question, I wouldn't be bringing it up.
All right. Let's go to Ray calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
I have a question for our guest.
Yeah. I've been hearing persistent rumors about John McCain becoming the next president in 2008. And, you know, I'm kind of worried.
Well,
you know, the guy...
Well, why are you worried about John McCain?
Well,
is it simply because the media, every time they want to get a senator, asks John McCain? His picture is in the paper every day.
Yeah.
His picture is on television every day. And, of course, many people believe that he went over to the North Vietnamese. Certainly, his fellow POWs hate him because they feel he betrayed our country during the war as a prisoner.
Yeah. I've been hearing a lot about John McCain, and there was a huge article in the New Yorker about him, and I think he's
Let's get Bob's thoughts. What do you think about John McCain, Bob?
Well, nobody ever talks about the fact that when he came back from being released in Vietnam, that he was taken to Austria and deprogrammed, and I believe that McCain is totally mind-controlled. And
I have an article out of the new Newsweek, and anybody would like to see it. When some reporter asked him, Senator McCain, why are you running for the presidency? This was, 4 years ago? And he said, because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. And anybody who's ever seen the book, the story of Manchurian Candidate, remember that Angela Lansbury triggered the Manchurian Candidate by turning over the Queen of Diamonds. We have the article.
Okay.
Look, we've got one more caller.
You got to watch who was at the first time at the Bilderberger meeting is John Warner. And if he does what he's supposed to do, he's enormously wealthy. He's already in the latest. And everything works right. He's going to be the next winner.
I have this feeling about him, too.
Okay, well, we got to keep an eye on Hillary. Anyway, look, thanks very much, Ray. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's all.
All right, fine. And we'll get Tico back here in just from Berkeley, New York, in just a minute. I guess that's Berkeley, New York. Anyway, just hang on. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got Tico calling us from Berkeley, New York. Hi, Berk. Tico, are you close to Albany? Where are you close to?
No, Dr. Stan, I'm over here in Berkeley, New York, close to Queens and New York City.
Okay, then you're listening on what, shortwave or the internet?
Yes, shortwave radio, Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. You have a question for our guest.
Well, not really a question. I'd like to make a couple of comments.
Okay.
And I'd like, first of all, to thank you for giving us such a unique and informative program, Dr. Stan. You're doing a terrific job. I've become like a little baby waiting for you every evening.
Well, God bless you for saying that.
Yes. The next point that I would like to mention is, as a matter of fact, today I was thinking, my God, what happens if the Congress may come up with the idea to impeach the president? And I was astonished when your guest mentioned that tonight, because of all his absurdities that he's doing. I also would like to let you know that you're so correct when you describe the vice president. I think his evilness shows in his face, believe it or not. Everything surrounding the president seems to be very negatively. The last thing that I would like to say is that as far as home prices are concerned, we saw the trend coming in New York City, and it's just such a tragedy to see how homes are being sold throughout the city for so outrageous prices. Homes that about 20 years ago people would get for $19,000 and $20,000. Now they want $500,000 for such a home.
Well, just hang on. You may be getting cheap again. That's all we can hope for.
I hope so, Dr. Stan.
Anyway, God bless you, and thanks you very much.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. Okay, Bob, we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, I'd like to say that I read the New York Post and the New York Times every day. And if you want to get unnerved for the day, and I start at 4 a.m., read the Post, because it's got all of the things that have happened overnight. And I'll tell you, the situation in New York City is no better now than it was 50 years ago. But anyway, please, everybody, get out of debt. Get rid of those credit card debts and revolving credit. Try to clear your automobiles. Many of you will be without a job next year. Try to pull your horns in and try to do the best you can to remain solvent.
God bless you, and I appreciate everything you're doing, Bob. We'll look forward to talking to you, I guess, on our afternoon program on Wednesday. Tuesday, Wednesday, anyway. God bless. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me again. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, well, I guess this evening was Bob Chapin. I hope you enjoyed what he had to say. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Bob's parting thought for our listeners this evening was get out of debt, get consolidated. Oh, we're going to have some very, very difficult times. An awful lot of people are going to lose their jobs. Just get yourself situated so you can survive the very, very difficult times that lie ahead. And I would echo that. I mean, when Paul Volcker, those of you who heard our opening remarks about the article he wrote in the Washington Post on the 10th of April, and that would be of this year, the 10th of April in the Washington Post. Paul Volcker, if you have access to the internet, just go to Google and type in Paul Volcker, Washington Post, April 10th. You'll get the article. Read it, study it, read it again, study it, memorize it, and understand what he's saying. And then, like Paul Revere, get out there and try to warn others so that they can at least make preparations. And maybe, as they see these things unfolding, they'll remember what you said. And maybe they'll listen to you about other things as we try to explain to people. We're involved in a spiritual battle because behind everything that is going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces. And there truly is another dimension there. There truly are forces that you can tap into, but you do at the risk of your eternal soul. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read it. We have a couple of excellent newsletters. That would be November and December of last year. August, September, and October of last year, 2004. They're up on my website. That goes into the spiritual forces behind what's going on economically. That's August, September, October. And you can get that at radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. We have some excellent books, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, Gold for Investment, Gold for Barter, I think it is a Gold for Security, and then, of course, the book entitled Fiat Money Inflation in France. The book really describes what happened in France back in 1789, but it's like deja vu all over again. And if you haven't, of course, don't understand what happened in the past, you can't understand what's going on today. We carry Bill Still's excellent book, The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, which I think is a top-notch book. And then, of course, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you were to read most of those books, you would have a tremendous grasp of what's going on today. And that would be Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, Professor Sutton's Gold for Survival, a Gold for Investment, and then Fiat Money Inflation in France. Oh, let me suggest my recent DVD. It's a DVD we did, a talk we gave in Southern California, Coming Financial Crisis. That's The Coming Financial Crisis, which will summarize everything and going into Paul Volcker's article. It's right up to date. That DVD I can recommend to you because it gives you an excellent overview of exactly what's going on today. And then, of course, the books... The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies, because there is an ancient plan of secret societies, and it's coming to fruition now, plus my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website is radioliberty.com. We do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. I would simply remind you, we do carry the Berkey products and the Miracle 2 products and Sanji and these other things that do help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day by radio, by shortwave, by internet, and of course 4 hours on shortwave, 5 hours on satellite. We have an opportunity to reach people, but it's up to you to get people listening. And you've got to tell people and encourage them to tell other people. That's how we're going to be able to get people to understand. And of course, remember what Paul Volcker said. I don't know whether it's going to be sooner or later. We don't know whether it's going to be with a shout or with a whimper, but it's coming. There's no instance in all history where a nation has spent 6% more than it's taking in indefinitely. And so, for those who are leaving, why, please pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty. Otherwise, we'll be back in just a moment here for the second hour of Radio Liberty. looking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we're hoping, against hope, that we're going to have Barrett shows with us this hour. Today started out a 7 o'clock program this morning on the American Freedom Network. My guest didn't call in. Our 3 o'clock program went just great. Wonderful interview with Bill, with Dennis Cuddy. But then the 4 o'clock guest didn't show up. So we're just a little gun shy today. If we had lost 3 guests today, I would have to. Of course, when I don't have a guest, and we just sort of got to start talking without anything prepared at all, and sometimes that can get a little difficult. Well, we're going to be talking with Barrett, hopefully about Star Wars, about this whole idea of the George Lucas films. And you have to understand that George Lucas is involved with the New Age and with the occult. And in fact, the Presidio is an occult center, that Presidio up in San Francisco. And the whole idea, of course, of Star Wars is the good and the bad sides of the Force. But it is supernatural. And you remember the of initial Star Wars series, where Luke Skywalker learned that through manipulation of his mind, he could begin to control matter and activity and control almost with a supernatural power. In other words, he was using his intellect to be able to raise the spaceship out of the mire. And, of course, all of these ideas really come from the occult. Of course, he was supposedly the good side of the occult, and Darth Vader was on the bad side of the occult. But both of these are part of the Force, the good side of the Force, the bad side of the Force. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, both sides of the Force are bad and wicked. It's like white witches and black witches, but they're both, of course, delving into the other dimension. And that's what it's really all about, as you begin to tap into this other dimension that is really there. But most people are totally unaware of it. We live in a world of materialism, but there is a spiritual level that most people are, well, they don't even like to think about. Most people are totally unaware of it. And yes, if you are a Christian, you read the Bible, time and again you'll find the references to Jesus encountering people who were demonically possessed. And, well, where do these demons come from? Well, with that as a background, let's go to Barrett. Barrett, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan.
And we're going to talk about Star Wars. Go ahead.
Right. Well, it's been going on for a long time, hasn't it?
Well, I think the basic theme has been going on since the Garden of Eden. But, of course, Star Wars goes back 20 years, the modern Star Wars, George Lucas' Star Wars. But, of course, he's picking up on an ancient and occult theme.
Absolutely, and it's an interesting blend. You know, it fits right into the UN's desire for a global spirituality, something that blends other religions so that you can hardly, you know, so that we can all be one, something that doesn't offend anybody and somehow makes everyone feel like they can be part of it. And so here you have Buddhism and Hinduism and Shinto and Confucianism, and then you have Christians like Dick Staub, who has written a book about being a Christian Jedi, and so he's showing how Christianity can fit right in it also.
And the New World Order, the New World Religion, that's what it's all about, and people have to understand that Christianity has been thoroughly infiltrated. It is turning away from its first love, from its first calling, and embracing, in my estimation, the dark forces of the universe. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Barrett. Pick up the story from there.
Well, I guess it's just, you mentioned Presidio. Maybe we could just say a few things about the Presidio, because I was very concerned when after episode one, which came appeared a few years ago, going back to the very beginning of George Lucas's Star Wars epics, there was a big debate about who would replace the big hospital at the Presidio, at that old U.S. Army base that now had become was becoming part of the of the of the U.S. Park Service, and finally George Lucas won and is building his Lucasfilm empire at the Presidio, and it seemed very appropriate because his neighbors at the Presidio fit right in with what he believes. And I just think it's good to give that for background information, because a lot of people will say, so what? This is just fantasy. It has nothing to do with, you know, what's real. People don't believe it. People recognize that it's fiction. It's a myth. Don't worry about it. But what we're seeing in schools and among global leaders in television, PBS, doesn't matter where we turn these days, we're going to find suggestions coming to us through entertainment. And BBC has called this kind of entertainment edutainment, implying that you have education through entertainment, and that's exactly what Star Wars is. It's helping develop a global consciousness, which was called for by the people who established, again, this whole globalist center at the Presidio with the United Religions, with the Waldorf, Rudolf Steiner, who started the Waldorf Schools, the Tides Foundation, and a lot of other organizations that were deeply involved in transforming the world.
And so all of these are situated at the Presidio in San Francisco, which is really an occult center for people involved with the occult. All of these occult organizations are there. There are no Christian organizations there, of course. But then isn't that fitting that that would be situated at the Presidio, which is then located in Baghdad, by the bay, or should I say Sodom by the bay? San Francisco is an evil town. It has embraced evil. The good people there certainly have sit back as the evil people have taken over that city. And certainly what we see there in San Francisco is a total example of total depravity. And the tragic thing is the good people go along with it, just like they did in Sodom there, the southern end of the Dead Sea.
Sounds good. As you mentioned earlier, the Force in Star Wars has a good side and a bad side.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We bring our other stations back on board. Well, I guess this evening is Barrett's show, since she's just been expressing her interest in the fact that we have George Lucas and we have certain other United Religions and various other occult organizations all centered there at the Presidio in San Francisco. People who are looking and searching for a new spirituality have rejected the God of the Bible that we worship. And, of course, they embrace an ever-growing number of people getting into this alternative religion, a religion of which everybody in the world will eventually embrace. And this is the New World Religion that combines Hinduism and Buddhism and so many of the Shintoism and the New Age religions and certainly Satanists and witches and Luciferians, and all of these people would fit in there. They'd fit in there very comfortably, the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists and the Masons, and all of this is simply anything to repudiate the God of the Bible.
Right, and yet Christians think they are represented there as well. I mean, people, just like they have with various other occult movies and books, are saying, well, they contain Christian themes, battle of good against evil, and yet, as you mentioned earlier, that battle between good side of occultism and the bad side of occultism, and of course there is no good side, but what is perceived as being good, is what was happening in pagan cultures around the world before they were introduced to Jesus Christ, and that was simply to put out sacrifices and so on, as in the Arab lands and in Africa and so on, sacrifice to the what they considered evil forces, but the sacrifice to what they thought were the good forces who could resist the evil forces. And of course it was all manipulation by the spiritual mind behind all things. In fact, it's good to remember here that 1 John 5:19 says the whole world is under the sway of the evil one, and right now Christians are being lured into these mythical stories and are allowing the fantasies to transform their values by letting what seems good, what God calls evil, now seems good to them.
And, you know, it's so interesting. We've seen how motion pictures have been used in the past to push evil doctrines. Actually, the cigarette industry hired a man named Edward Bernays 50 years ago. His job was to convince women they should smoke. Now, when I went to medical school, why, a very few women smoked. We saw almost no lung cancer in women. And then, of course, in those days, women were beginning to smoke. Why? Because they were constantly seeing the advertisements in the newspapers and in the magazines and even in the medical journals. And then, of course, we would see the motion pictures, and the woman was always smoking. And simply by repetition, by use of massive form of propaganda, repeated over and over again, eventually women began smoking. And today, why, the second most common cause of lung cancer in women, second most common cause of cancer in women is lung cancer. So, certainly these things do have an effect. People say, oh, well, it's just fantasy. Well, if it's fantasy, why do advertisers spend literally millions of dollars for a minute on nationwide television? Why? Because they know it will have an impact on the subconscious. But right, even more so is would be programs like Star Wars. The idea that there is a good side to the Force. It's like there is good witchcraft. There are white witches and black witches. No, they're all witches and they're all evil. But, of course, even many of the white witches do not understand that when they begin looking into the supernatural and getting in contact with the other dimension, they're laying themselves open to evil spirits, because everything there comes from the evil side.
That's right. Let me just read you a statement by Dick Staub, who supposedly is a Christian, and he had written an article for Christianity Today where he blends those two opposites that we've been discussing into a new tempting twist on truth. He tells us that Christianity is a prevailing myth of Western culture. Prevailing myth of Western culture.
And this man professes to be a Christian, calling Christianity a myth?
Right. And Star Wars is the prevailing myth of our popular culture.
Why would Christianity Today print something like that?
Because,
or maybe that tells us a lot more about Christianity.
They've been shifting with popular culture.
Right.
And when Christianity Today, who has held a fairly respected position among Christians for decades, I know... I mean, 20 years ago, I used to read it and appreciate it. I don't read it anymore, but I receive links to articles once in a while because they are very revealing about how what we see as Christianity, what is called Christianity, is making a total roundabout transformation.
Well, I think that the forces of darkness have infiltrated the Catholic Church. I mean, they think they've infiltrated the Protestant Church. I think they've infiltrated our organizations, our anti-communist, our conservative, certainly all of our organizations. Specifically, though, they've targeted Christianity. They're doing a great job of destroying it from within.
Right, right. Here's one more statement by Dick Staub. He said, Lucas stories may have more in common with Hinduism than with Christianity, but it's still true myth, says the author of Christian Wisdom of the Jedi Master. This is a book Staub has written. He says, a myth is a story that confronts us with a big picture, something transcendent and eternal, and so doing explains the worldview of a civilization. This is an important statement. It's partly true, just like the statement that the serpent made to Eve in the garden. There were some truth which made the whole statement believable, but of course it was a total lie and deception. And what he's saying here is that the myth provides a worldview for a civilization. And that makes it all the more dangerous in this case, because people will believe it is a myth. And in a postmodern culture where people are already letting go, especially our children and youth and young parents, many have already let go of that understanding that biblical truth is absolute. It doesn't change. And so when they see new feel-good twists on truth, they have no resistance. to buying into it, and all of a sudden they're vulnerable to just flow with popular entertainment and accept those new myths as being part of the Christian truth, the story, the understanding and the body of truth that we have in the scriptures.
And the thing is that unless you are well acquainted with what's going on, unless you understand the message of the occult, unless you're solidly founded in the Bible, you're going to go see the Star Wars films, and you're going to be entertained without realizing that your mind is going to begin to be controlled by these ideas. And all they're doing is planting ideas in our minds. And we may not even understand the significance of those ideas, but they understand what they're doing. Because they have an intense hatred of Christianity, and Christianity is the major target of the dark forces in the world today, in my estimation.
Right, right. Maybe we could talk just for a moment about life after death, because what it's also doing is providing a new understanding. I mean, one of the hope we have through God's Word, when we are made one with Jesus Christ, is a hope for an eternity with Him. And, of course, the Star Wars movies provides an entirely different kind of hope, and yet it provides hope. Again, in pagan cultures, there wasn't that much hope in an afterlife. In some places there was, in other places there wasn't. Buddhism and Hinduism didn't provide much of a hope, at least not for a personal existence after death. But in the Star Wars, you have a sense of a promise of a personal existence after death, because you look at the example of Qui-Gon or Qi-Gong, depending on, you know, how it looks like Qui-Gon, but my understanding is that it's pronounced Qi-Gong. He dies. In fact, he's cremated, just in the same way that the body might be cremated at the site of the Ganges. Andy and I watched those kinds of cremations when we were in India many years ago. And at the end of his life, as his body disappears in the flames, Obi-Wan Kenobi put his hand on little Anakin's shoulder. Anakin is 9 years old at this point, and he says, "You must let go." And Obi-Wan Kenobi says, "I am your master now. You will become a Jedi. That's the promise." But he also says, "He is one with the Force, Anakin." In other words, he's gone back, but he's not one with the Force in an impersonal way. He's not just merged into a nirvana. He now comes back to council, and we see the appearances of this Jedi Master as he counsels Yoda and Obi-Wan Kenobi and provides a new understanding of how you can prepare in your life to again have a personal existence afterwards. But it has nothing to do with Jesus Christ. But many would say, well, here's just another Christian theme. But the theme is close enough to the truth that people begin to blend it in with biblical truth to the point where they can no longer sort between what is a myth and what is a truth.
And, of course, the Christian belief is that it is given but once to die, and then the judgment. And we don't come back to counsel people. In fact, many of the people, of course, go to mystics and to seances to contact the dead. We're told not to do that in the Bible. No, to stay away from that sort of thing, the diviners, because this is all demonic. And so much of this going on in the world today, the ghosts and the visitations, are frankly demonic manifestations. But that's not the impression you get from the Star Wars, is it?
No, in fact, what really comes out in these scenes of death and appearances has more to do with theosophy than Buddhism or Hinduism. Again, it's an example of how it pulls from so many different sources, because within theosophy, again, people can make spiritual contact with ascended masters. And here you have a couple of ascended masters who die, and then the people who are still living can make contact with those and learn the wisdom and find guidance.
And it sounds wonderful, but
it's horrendous. This is dark, deep, dark occultism.
We'll be back in just a moment with Barrett Joseph. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan here, it sounds like there's just lots of occult themes all throughout this whole series. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it certainly is. And again, let me tie it to one other tradition, and we can call it a religion, whatever. I want to talk about the samurai, for example, for a moment, because apparently the samurai, the Japanese warrior class, was the model that George Lucas used for the Jedi Knights.
Well, go right ahead then.
Okay. Let me just quote from an article called It's Written in the Stars, which says, George Lucas has mentioned on many occasions that he had been highly influenced by the seminal Japanese director Akira Kurosawa. He then lists, and this article lists some similarities, and I'm just going to read some of these similarities. The Jedi are an enlightened class, meant to preserve peace, as were the samurai. In theory, they weren't always this peace-loving, but the history has idealized them, and in the ideal story, they are the preservers of peace and unity and justice and so on. Second point, the distinctive lightsabers are little more than the Japanese katana in a science fiction setting. Again, the swords used by the samurai. The highly ritualized battles are little more than Japanese kendo. Now, I'm not familiar with all these Japanese terms, but again, I assume this refers to the type of fighting that was very stylistic, very specific, when they were fighting real battles. Darth Vader's helmet is based on a samurai helmet. The look of Episode I's Darth Maul is based heavily on Japanese myths and drama, especially the drama mask. And finally, two more. The Queen Nabu's ornate costumes are hardly reminiscent of the Japanese kimono. This struck me as being, you know, it really is. While her white face paint is geisha wear. It's painted like a Japanese geisha girl might, often a prostitute. And finally, the Force is little more than the martial arts concept of the Kai or Chai, as any anime fan would attest to. And so here we have, again, it's something that fits right in with the new consciousness that's being built through the anime. I get so many letters, Dr. Stan. We've talked about Pokemon and Digimon the various popular Dragon Ball Z, popular anime that children are so fascinated with these days. Sailor Moon is another one, which is especially attractive to girls. But again, all of them use this force, this Kai or Chai, this universal force that they tap into, which becomes part of them. Each person has it within because it's part of everything in nature. And so by, again, learning the right rules for meditation and putting yourself into an altered state of consciousness, children can, and adults, begin to think in terms of there are things I can learn there to become someone who can manipulate the force. It's very much like in occult orders. Again, there it was very specific, but when you get down to what are the steps that are part of tapping into occult powers, it doesn't change all that much. It's basically concentration, relaxation.
And hold that thought there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan Baron is talking about the fact that George Lucas was relying a great deal on the Japanese concept, the samurai warrior, the specific types of fighting. And many of these types of fighting had to do not only with physical accomplishments, but with mental accomplishments. And, of course, beginning to tap into this force, this invisible force that would be out there that would make you the mightiest of all warriors. And you could then begin to utilize this other power to be victorious. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. The four parts to manipulating those forces, the basic abilities which are outlined by the witch and the founder of the covenant of the goddess Starhawk. We used to talk about this a long time ago, and it's all the same concepts are just reappearing in different packages, different wrappings, so that children now are getting the same message that their parents received 20 years ago or 25 years ago, but it's wrapped a little bit differently, but the parents can feel comfortable with it because they'd already begun to embrace some of these idealistic mythologies that came to them through entertainment. But the four points that Starhawk writes about in her book, The Spiral Dance, of how to contact and manipulate the forces of nature, which would be for her as a witch or Wiccan, it would be, you know, again, the basic witchcraft. And she says, relaxation, concentration, visualization, and projection. The last one is mental projection. We see little Anakin go through that when he starts that pod race in the episode one. He concentrates and he connects with the force, and all of a sudden he feels a surge of power. This is actually described in one of the books that were put out, I think, Scholastic Publishing House, which published the Harry Potter books, put out a number of Star Wars books for children. They may have been the publisher of that one, but you can read the steps of how to connect with the Force. The final one, mental manipulation, once you're in an altered state of consciousness, is simply taking the images that you visualize and moving them according to your own will, and then things would be happening, that is, if you have in your altered state of consciousness actually connected with the occult forces. And more people are able to do that these days, Dr. Stan. It's almost as if God has removed that protection that for so many years kept America fairly safe from occult forces. They could play with Ouija boards and do all kinds of things, but they didn't face the consequences. Now children and adults are facing the consequences.
And, of course, you know, you can get into this sort of thing, and you will develop supernatural power, but at the danger of your eternal soul. And of course, once you, of course, get into this sort of thing, you will be used, and eventually you'll be destroyed and cast aside. This is what so many of the people in music are doing today. They're tapping into this supernatural force and utilizing this to get ahead, to be successful, to get a great deal of money and popularity. And if you've ever noticed how many of our music stars die young, well, the same thing permeates every aspect of our life. But now it's not just the music stars that are getting into this, but even average people are getting into it. And young people are getting into it. And they're beginning to develop this ability to channel ideas from the other dimension.
Right. Again, theosophy has been teaching people a lot about channeling messages and the functioning as a medium, and that used to take place in seances. Now it can just be, now you don't need a seance anymore. Maybe I can repeat just one illustration as a warning, which I've shared before on your program, Dr. Stan, but I think it might be worth saying again. I received a call some years ago from a psychologist up in Canada who was concerned because so many Christian women were coming up to Alberta to do spirit quests and sweat lodge ceremonies so they could meet their animal spirit. And he said, no, hardly anybody ever had any results. They didn't connect with any spiritual force, any animals, anything they could call or refer to as their animal spirit. And then everything seemed to change in the 90s, late 90s. He said, now all of a sudden people are connecting right away with spiritual powers, and not only one spirit will talk to them, but they will hear many different spirits, and they're confused, they're oppressed, they can't sleep at night, they're troubled, they're suicidal. And he said, I think it's demonic.
Well, for a psychiatrist to say that, that's quite a statement. Of course it's demonic.
Yes, but he was a Christian, so that's why he called me. Sure. He had read my book, Under the Spell of Mother Earth, and he was just calling to discuss what he saw happening up there because nobody else understood it.
Well, unless you come from a Christian perspective, unless you hear programs like this or have read books like Under the Spell of Mother Earth or certainly some of the other excellent books that are out there, you find it so difficult. In fact, we just reread Joanna Michelson's The Beautiful Side of Evil. And, well, we'll talk about that a little bit when we get back. We Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest this evening is Barrett Schoes. Her website is crossroad.to. That's crossroad.to. And, of course, we're talking about so many people are getting involved in the spirit world, and they're being introduced to it, you know, of course they may have been introduced to it in the past, but certainly the George Lucas films, and so many of the other films that we have, but the George Lucas films specifically, they're powerful films. But they also intrigue you. Wouldn't it be great to be in touch with the Force, to be able to use your mind, to be able to manipulate the events and people and physical forces? So you pick up the story there, Barrett.
Well, in this, the temptation, the suggestion that you can do just that comes through so many different sources. We mentioned anime earlier, but you have the Harry Potter books and a whole new flood of occult books for teenagers from Scholastic's publisher and others who have discovered that there's a real financial treasure lying in putting out occult books, because that's what children want now. The old guard against this type of material isn't there anymore. Children have been desensitized, so have parents. We used to feel there used to be a sense of darkness and you shudder and no, you don't want to look at that. That's gone now, because what should not be familiar to us has become so familiar that it sounds and feels normal, and people are no longer afraid. They're not afraid of God. There's no fear of God, and there's no fear of Satan, because we begin to get the sense that everything is going to be okay. It's fun and games, and we can manipulate the Force, and there won't be any consequences.
Well, of course, once we take away the fact that there is judgment, once we take away the fact that there is sin, once we change the message of the gospel, so that God is only love, that message comes right out of the very pit of hell. And if God is only love, it is the ultimate triumph of evil. And of course, this is never mentioned in our churches today, and yet this is the very essence of what's going on. If God is only love, if there's no punishment, there's no judgment, then God is not just. And of course, if you read Luciferian material, and I do, they will always tell you that God is love, but never that God will judge you, because Lucifer doesn't judge you. He gives you license to do whatever you want to. He gives you total freedom. And freedom is not the ability to do what you want to do. Freedom is the ability to do what you should do according to God's law. And once we've forgotten that, of course, why we lay ourselves open for personal tragedy, and society, of course, lays itself open for the ultimate destruction of the very foundation upon which all of our freedom rests. We'll be back in just a moment with Barrett. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barrett Schoes. And if you have not been to her website at crossroad.to, that's crossroad.to. Let me suggest that you do. Crossroad.to, and fascinating articles there on all sorts of subjects, but specifically the latest ones on Star Wars. So you pick up the story there, Barrett.
Yes, I want to go back to the point of freedom, because I think that's such an important point. I just want to add that, in a sense, you might say the freedom that Satan offers is an illusion of freedom, because you're not really free. It just feels free, and it goes along with the kind of freedom that people think they can have in the culture today. Part of the transformation that we've been going through in the United States and the Western world is, again, moving from certain moral constraints that some people didn't like, and increasingly those moral constraints have been put aside to the point where homosexuality and promiscuity and all kinds of sexual experiences are perfectly okay, and people think they have freedom in this country. And of course, what it leads to is social chaos and personal bondage, because you become so driven by desires that were stirred and loosened by the promiscuity, by setting aside God's boundaries for real freedom. Real freedom is to have self-discipline to do what you know is right. Now, without that discipline, you have no freedom other than to follow your feelings, because people can't discipline themselves anymore. And we see this, and this is a horrendous problem in schools today. there was some discussion just this last week in the media about middle schools not being able to pass a test, doing so poorly in education, and now you have to train teachers not in their particular academic subject, but to understand the feelings of teenagers, you know, which makes a mockery of education, but somehow you want to condone and make people feel good and so on, because these kids are in real trouble. They're really disturbed. They don't have any self-discipline. And so the kind of freedom that we're talking about that comes through this new consciousness and today's entertainment, and which has been promoted by the National Education Association and schools for decades, is actually a way of putting people into bondage. It's what I don't have Huxley's Brave New World in front of me. I quote him quite a bit in my book, Brave New Schools, because it fits in so well. But he says that, you know, in order for the dictator to be able to carry through the various controls that he wants to put on society in order to have absolute control and to be able to rule people, you have to allow them to have sexual freedom, because that causes people to forget and ignore the freedom they are losing.
I think that's such a good point.
And it's interesting that the same point is made in an article that I was reading in preparation for this article, which again is on our website. It's the Star Wars and the Revenge of the Sith. But what's stated in here is most martial arts have within them the concept of Zanshin, or acting in pure manner without thinking. Moving in Zanshin requires long training and devotion to the art. One must listen to the force rather than think. A Jedi naturally fights and moves in Zanshin when it's necessary. And you follow, you listen to your intuition and your feeling, and you act without hesitation. And of course, this is what schools are telling children to do. Don't worry about facts. In fact, as Shirley McEwen, who headed up the Mid-Continent Regional Laboratory for turning, the whole thing is so complicated. We know, because we've talked about before, national educational laboratories figured out how to change the minds of children, how to brainwash them, literally, how to apply the communist hypo-brainwashing to children in this country, and you wouldn't even know it. And she was one of the key change agents within that whole system. And she was also one of the keynote speakers for the 1989 Governors' Conference. And she told the governors, first Governors' Conference, she told the governors that we're no longer, one of the things that have changed in education is we're no longer teaching facts to children. The children are not grounded in factual thinking. They're grounded in operating according to their feelings, which is a prerequisite for being able to for dictators to be able to control the population. And Star Wars fits right in, and that's one of the key points of suggestion. One of the idealistic suggestions in this movie is you don't think based on facts or logic; you think based on your feelings. You act based on your feelings.
And, of course, once you can get in touch with your feelings, then you can begin to manipulate all sorts of things, matter and reality. And this is really what's so frightening, is that this message comes right out of the very pit of hell.
Yes, it does.
And yet, of course, our young people are absorbing this sort of thing. And you cannot see a motion picture without that being indelibly imprinted in your subconscious. You may not even realize it's there. But these ideas, will be with you the rest of your life, unless, of course, you can counter them with the truth, and that is God's truth, but certainly not the truth you're going to get from contemporary culture. Well, let's go to Roger, who's calling us and waiting patiently here. He's calling from Pennsylvania. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Roger, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, as you were talking, it really brought to mind, as I was thinking quite a bit lately, that as I should hope that those of any religion, including atheism, would ask themselves, why is it, why should it be that the world over, all religions are tolerated over that of Orthodox, that is correct, or biblical Christianity, Has anyone ever heard of anyone killing or just trying to avoid getting killed over flushing Bibles down the toilet? I mean, we have a problem just keeping Christians alive even without Bibles. So what should it be about Christianity that should be particularly despised, unless precisely the fear is that it's the most frightful of things, the truth, that it doesn't cater to their fables or conceits. It's the most personally unflattering of religions. Well, it's the most hopeful as well, but people should ask, for example, what was it about Mother Teresa that she was uniquely tolerated in India, when it's simply that she's on record, unretracted, stating that as long as you're a good Hindu or a good Muslim or a good Catholic, in other words, within the context of your own understanding, that that's sufficient to pass muster with the God of your choice. So I guess popular consensus, the numbers will continue to trump what some would.
All right, let's get Barris's input on what you said. Thanks very much, Roger. And, of course, Roger, I think the major question he's asking is, why is it that, you know, there is such much antagonism to traditional Christianity? And how would you respond to that?
Well,
why is it that, you know, it's all right to teach the Muslim religion in our schools, it's all right to teach Hinduism and Buddhism and New Ageism and atheism and humanism, but we can't mention the name of the God of the Bible? Why is that?
Well, I think the first reason, there are several reasons. First reason, again, we can go back to 1 John 5:19. The whole world is under the control or sway of the evil one, and the evil one hates God, and he is turning people against God. This happens especially, well, I shouldn't say especially right now, because it's always been happening to some degree. When Christians fit into society, you don't have the hostility. If Christians separate themselves and uphold certain moral standards, it makes other people uncomfortable because they want to justify what they do. When even if it's something God says, don't do such and such, don't worship other gods, don't be involved in adultery and so on. When Christians, even if they kindly keep to themselves, they will. But if they hold on to biblical absolutes, they will be despised in a culture that is following feelings, because those feelings say, I want to be approved, I want to be accepted for who I am, I don't want anybody even to think that what I'm doing is not right. It's sort of a pat yourself society of patting yourself on the back, which is what the dialectic process is teaching Christians to do when you get together in small groups where everybody will affirm everybody else all the time, no matter what they do, so that everyone will feel good. Jesus said concerning those who will not conform, those who do take a stand, he said in John 15, starting with verse 18, he says, if you were of the world would love its own. But because you're not of the world hates you. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you, because they do not know the one who sent me. And that's where we are today. In this particular society, when pluralism and solidarity are being promoted as being the only way to bring about peace and justice and unity around the world, people like us who stand in the way, who become hindrances in churches that are flowing with the times and embracing all kinds of occult philosophies that God forbids, we become the resistors, we become the enemy. In John 16:2, Jesus says, they will, how does that one go? They will think they are doing God a favor when they put you to death, because people will have so embraced the notion that my good, the pluralistic, holistic good, is God's good, that when they are confronted with biblical truth, they will think that is evil and they will put the Christian to death.
Well, I think that the problem is that they want toleration for everything. Toleration for, deviant forms of living, and toleration for sexual immorality and toleration for wars and for violence, but we cannot tolerate traditional Christianity. The difficulty is that people don't understand. There is a conspiracy against God and against God's people, against God's word, and it's been around since the beginning of time.
If anybody doubts that, just read Psalm 2, where we read about how the kings of the earth gather together to disempower God, to take the moral bounds away from, we see it throughout the Bible. Conspiracies abound.
And if you go to your concordance and look up the word conspiracy, you'll find it's used many times. There's nothing wrong with the word conspiracy, because there's always been a conspiracy against God. And the fact that nobody ever mentions that. And, when, of course, you're accused of being a conspiratologist, and, you're just such a nut, and you probably believe in black helicopters, and you probably believe, that George Bush, really knew that there are no weapons of mass destruction over there. You are a real kook. Well, there have always been conspiracies. There was a conspiracy to murder Julius Caesar. There was a conspiracy to murder Abraham Lincoln, because he executed half a dozen people after Lincoln was assassinated. Conspiracy is part of life, and yet, of course, nobody ever tells people that the word conspiracy is used over and over again in the Bible. And it's that same conspiracy that we face today, in my estimation.
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Stam. And people embrace the media that mocks conspiracy theories, that mocks anything that they don't want to hear, and they are silent about all the opposite evidence. Contrary evidence isn't made public, other than through radio programs like yours and the internet, but that's partly people accept that and flow with what they're hearing, because again, it feels good. It's becoming, they hear it over and over again, it's becoming normal, and they accept it because they don't have the factual, logical foundation for thinking. I was actually talking not long ago with a Christian leader. I won't mention the name right now, but I had questioned some things he had spoken about in his speech, and I happened to have dinner with him, and he was talking about marrying the heart and the head. The new philosophy is that you don't want to think with your head, you want to think with your heart, which is basically what the Star Wars message is, as far as the example of Qigong. Act on your feelings. Don't try to think about what you should do. Don't be logical in your thinking. So afterwards at the dinner, I said, I was really uncomfortable with, no, I didn't say, we'll start there. I said something about, what did you mean, when you said marry the heart? Are you talking about a heart that has been regenerated after being born, a person who's born again and has a new heart? We're told in Jeremiah 31 and 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and so on, that we have a new heart after we're born again. Are you talking about the new heart or the old heart? The old heart, for example, in Jeremiah 17 says that it's wicked and deceitful. Are you talking about the old heart or the new heart that's being married to the head? And he got really upset. He said, I'm not talking theologically. I don't want to, it's not are you born again or are you not. And yet he was a Christian leader talking to supposedly Christians about how Christians should live. I was shocked, Dr. Stan, because I thought he would know better. You cannot lead with your heart. Either way, you have to have, if you're born again, your heart is different. You will have a sense of hearing. But either way, you have to base your thinking on the written word, on facts, and you have to think logically.
And you see, so much of the movement of Christendom today is emotional. We're looking for an emotional experience. And this is what the Alpha Course is all about. You go to the Alpha Course, and then when you get done, we're going to have a weekend, and you're going to have an emotional experience. Maybe you'll speak in tongues, or there'll be some other emotional thing. And somehow it is this emotional experience that is going to bring you to Christianity, and that's not what brings you to Christianity. It's not an emotional experience. There certainly may be emotion, there may be weeping, there may be, but it is not simply, an emotional, almost supernatural experience, which is what people are looking for today. I would say a contrite heart can be an emotional experience, but that's not what these people are looking for. They're looking for this wonderful sort of union with this other force that's out there.
And a contrite heart, again, is based on loving and knowing God's Word.
Amen to that.
So that you know what the standard is. There's no reason for contrition if you have no sense of God's values.
But you see, we're getting away from God's Word, and that's why we give so many different words of God, The Bible's the Word of God, but let's give you 15 different translations. Gets you totally confused, and then... Well, let's not spend our time on Bible study. Let's see, read the 40 Days of Purpose or the Purpose-Driven Life. And that Rick Warren says, you really don't need another Bible study. Why don't you get together and every week, read another chapter of my book? Hey, Ray is out there. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Here I am again. I just wanted to say that I would it be fair to say that Hollywood was part of Mystery Babylon?
Well, let's get the Barrett's thought on that. Do you think Hollywood is part of Mystery Babylon?
Well, I don't like to try to interpret what we read in, for example, in Revelation chapter 17 and 18. But I think everything that's part of the occult mystery is in the overall umbrella of Mystery Babylon. All the occultism.
So it's all underneath the same thing.
Yes.
But it talks in the Bible about in the latter days that they will be told to seducing spirits and doctrines and demons. So we're seeing that happening right now.
And they're going to be turning from the faith.
It's getting worse and worse.
Yes.
They're turning the faith.
2 Timothy chapter 4, where it says that the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but wanting to have their ears tickled, they will accumulate teachers in accordance with their desires.
Yes, and you have Hillary Clinton out there talking about channeling now. I had an article about her in the paper. She was giving a speech in New York City, and she was talking about channeling and talking to Eleanor Roosevelt.
Well, would you do you have that article available?
It's in the paper. It's in the Sentinel.
How recently?
Within the past 3 or 4 days.
Well, if you could find that old copy and get it to me, I'd sure appreciate it, because I'd love to see it. Because I'm not questioning it at all. I just want to have that in my repertoire.
It.
I mean, I know very well that she's, bringing mediums like Jean Houston into the White House when she was there to conjure up spirits. Why would she be doing that?
Well, I think you
pretty well know that she's in contact with these spirits.
Yeah, I think she's very much a part of it. And I think Hollywood, too, is connected with the political world, too. And as Father Malachi Martin said in his book, I think Windswept House, was it?
Right.
Or one of them, he talks about the evil people that we don't know they're faceless, but... we'd all be surprised if we knew which ones they were that were, actually Satanists, in our government. And
we'll be doing some newsletters on that. I think you'll be surprised. Hey, I got to let you go. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thanks,
okay,
Ray.
Bye.
What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight, Barrett? The hour's just flown by.
Well, again, just to celebrate, and I don't want to use the word celebrate, but just delight in the fact that our God reigns. In the middle of all of this, we can come to Him, no matter... If we do face the kind of persecution that would seem unthinkable in America right now, no matter what happens, we have a God who will take our hand and hold us close and comfort us and strengthen us for anything that comes. In Joshua, for example, 4:24, he gave us these words, which I think are so important. And it goes for every day. Choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And He is sufficient for every trial.
Choose who you will, but for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That's a beautiful, beautiful thought, and that's really what I think we're going to need to sustain us in the very difficult times, increasingly difficult times that lie ahead. Barrett, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Could you just mention that...
Hold just a moment, and we'll do it as soon as we get...
Okay, bye-bye.
No, hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan Barrett. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
I just want to make sure that people understand that crossroad is singular. Many people add an S, no S at the end of crossroad, and then it's .to.
Crossroad.to. You certainly want to go to crossroad.to. It's a great website. Good night. God bless.
Good night. Bye-bye. God bless you, Dr. Stan. Bye.
All right. I hope you've enjoyed Barrett, because Barrett, of course, is bringing out the fact that this darkness pervades every aspect of our society. Ray was talking about Hollywood. Well, we actually have the video put out by Carol Matriciana, where she interviews some fellow from Hollywood who says the purpose of Hollywood is to destroy Christianity. It's not to make money. It's to destroy Christianity. And I think that that's absolutely right. Barrett's point that all of the other religions are intent upon destroying Christianity. So many people, even within the church today, are undermining the very foundation of our Christian belief. And so you've got to learn to be wary. You've got to look to the Bible for the source of your opinions, the foundation of your belief. Because you don't believe, necessarily what I say. I'm not a minister. I've got a smattering of knowledge of the Bible. I go to a Bible-believing church. I go there every Sunday. Why? Because I learn about the Scriptures, and that has got to be the foundation of what we do. We've got to stick to the Scriptures. It's not what I believe. It's not what I feel. It's what the Scriptures say. That has to be the basis of your faith, and all that, really, I believe, we're going to have to sustain us in the weeks and months that lie ahead. And I believe we're coming into a very, very difficult time. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. We carry, of course, the book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow by Constance Cumby, that will take you in an understanding what this is really all about. That's The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. We have a pagan agenda special, and it gives you with books and with videos and with audio tapes. There really is another dimension out there. People are able to access another dimension, and it is truly a demonic dimension. If you have not yet listened to our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, why, you really need to. That's Aleister Crowley and his friends. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get our 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance, that you'll want to get our book and video on Lucifer's Children, and another excellent book we have on Lucifer's Lodge. Satan is alive and well in the world today. And until you understand that, and that there are literally millions of people here in the United States who follow him, and if you doubt that, go up on the web and pull up Satanism. Pull up Luciferianism. Just go to Google and type in Satanism, Luciferianism, witchcraft, the process church of the final judgment. The process church of the final judgment, and of course the Son of Sam was associated with that. Manson, of Hollywood fame, of Sharon Tate fame, was associated with it. And yet, isn't it amazing? The media never tells you about Manson's association with the process church, or the Son of Sam's association with the process church. Why? Well, you need to get the material on the process church and find out. But there really are dark and sinister spirits and forces which are working at every level of our society today. And you've got to help us get that truth out. Remember my book, it's called Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And we hope that you'll get a copy. Remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. The book Lucifer's Lodge, the book Lucifer's Children, and the video by the same name, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, our 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance. Ladies and gentlemen, these are not imaginary things, they're very real. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until, well, I guess tomorrow evening. No, it'll be Thursday. Tomorrow evening at the same time. Dr. Stan, good night. May the Lord be with you.